This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
As Senator makes history for a talkathon, lawmakers dig for more answers on the assassination of JFK, and the Justice Department seeks the death penalty in a really big case. I'm Jenna, and this is Smarter News. Well, we have a ton of news happening right now on Capitol Hill this week, and I just want to fill you in on a few of the different highlights so far. We're going to start off in the Senate on a developing story there. Senator Cory Booker, a Democrat from New Jersey, is now in the history books for delivering one, if not the, longest Senate floor speeches ever. He says he wanted to speak out against the Trump administration, and one way to do that is just to keep talking.
Tonight, I rise with the intention of getting in some good trouble. I rise with the intention of disrupting the normal business of the United States Senate for as long as I am physically able.
Using talk time to slow down business in the Senate or halt the movement of legislation as a sign of protest has happened really for decades. Senator Booker's action is a little bit different because he's not trying to delay certain legislation. He's just sort of delivering a general speech rather than trying to stop a controversial law from being considered. So big picture, some political watchers say Senator Booker strategically here wants to establish himself as a leader for the Democratic Party in the Senate and beyond. And this is one way to do that, to speak passionately on a topic and gain some attention, which is what we're giving him right now, but it's notable. Now, as long as he has the floor, he can keep talking, but he has to keep talking to keep the floor. And we're going to see, because he's still talking at the time of this recording, how long he will go for. If he makes it past 24 hours, he will have broken the record for the longest speech ever. He can take breaks as long as another lawmaker takes over for him for a few moments and ask a question at the end. So if I was there, he could defer to me and I could start talking on any number of issues. And as long as I asked him a question, Senator Booker, what do you think about this? When I passed off to him, he maintains the floor. So we'll see what happens next, but that's what's happening in the Senate for now. Over in the House, legislation to allow lawmakers to vote from afar immediately following becoming a new mother after giving birth did not move forward. And there's a lot of drama around this, and I'm going to try to kind of pull it apart a little bit. So big picture, remote voting became common during the pandemic under the leadership of Democrats, under Speaker Pelosi. Republicans felt that this was abused, and when they regained the majority, they put a stop to it. So you have to vote in person. Democrat Congresswoman Brittany Peterson of Colorado introduced a bill that would allow new mothers to not have to travel back to Washington, D.C. to vote, something she had to do as a mom of a newborn just recently. She's joined by a Republican Congresswoman from Florida, Anna Paulina Luna, also a new mom, who couldn't return right away to Washington, D.C. for votes after she gave birth, and she says that prevented her from carrying out her constitutional duty. Now, this bill would allow proxy voting, virtual voting, essentially, in very specific cases, but there's still concern by some Republicans that voting from afar is unconstitutional, and they're worried about the precedent that's going to be set here, despite the fact that the bill is being narrowly defined, that there's this, still this concern that somehow it can be abused. Big picture, Republicans and Republican leadership did not want to consider this bill this week. They didn't want to talk about this right now. So they tried to link it to another vote, and it became a toxic brew. So they tried to link it to another vote on a completely separate issue. And a small group of Republicans joined all the Democrats in the House to defeat this vote, which will essentially hold up business in the House of Representatives for the rest of the week, because it was more or less a procedural vote. And this is the way that it works. There's certain procedural votes that have to happen before you can actually vote on an issue. So this has caused a bit of a mess. Here's Speaker Johnson.
Well, it's a very disappointing result on the floor there. A handful of Republicans joined with all the Democrats to take down a rule that's rarely done. It's very unfortunate in this case. 96% of House Republicans voted against proxy voting because they believe it's unconstitutional and they agree that it would open a Pandora's box. And so that's what we just saw. Let me just make this clear. That rule being brought down means that we can't have any further action on the floor this week. That means we will not be voting on the SAVE Act for election integrity. We will not be voting on the rogue judges who are attacking President Trump's agenda. We will not be taking down these terrible Biden policies with the CRA votes. All that was just wiped off the table. It's very unfortunate. We'll regroup and come back, and we'll have to do this again.
Obviously, Speaker Johnson didn't like the way that this works out, but these women are very passionate on this particular issue and updating this legislation. So what's going to happen next? To be determined. In the meantime, though, Congresswoman Ana Paulina Luna is also chair of the House Committee on Oversight and Reform. And that committee just held a hearing on the declassification of federal secrets, the JFK files. This took place with experts including Jefferson Morley, a widely respected researcher, and Hollywood director and documentary filmmaker Oliver Stone, amongst others. Here's one exchange that got a lot of attention between Nancy Mace, a Republican from South Carolina, and Jefferson Morley.
What did the CIA know about Lee Harvey Oswald, and when did they know it?
Mm-hmm.
A whole lot. Oswald was not the intellectual author of Kennedy's death, even if he fired a gun that day.
Who do you think was the intellectual author of Kennedy's death?
Kennedy's enemies high in his own government is as specific as I can be based on the available evidence. Mm-hmm. Probably CIA and Pentagon.
How long had the CIA been surveying Lee Harvey Oswald before the assassination attempt?
4 years.
Did the CIA or FBI have intelligence prior to the assassination of President Kennedy that Lee Harvey Oswald intended to kill him?
No.
Did the FBI did not either?
No.
Now, while there is bipartisan curiosity about this topic, not everyone loves the focus or the time spent on this.
Here's Jasmine Crockett, a Democrat from Texas.
While I value government accountability and transparency like most of my colleagues, nearly all the previously classified JFK assassination files are now public and show no evidence of a CIA conspiracy. But what I find funny about this hearing is that the Republicans are here relitigating whether CIA agents lied 60 years ago, but aren't doing anything about the CIA director lying to Congress just 6 days ago. We should be having a hearing on the fact that the unqualified Secretary of Defense and other senior Trump officials were carelessly discussing classified military plans over an unsecure Signal group chat. So instead of giving a platform to conspiracy theories, and let me be clear, there are holes. I don't want y'all to think that I don't think that there are holes. But when we're looking back, we need to look back so that we can look forward and hopefully do better. So that is why I am bringing us to present day.
So no major revelations from this hearing so far, but just important to note that lawmakers are still investigating this topic and asking more questions. In the meantime, we do have a development on a really big legal case. The U.S. federal government will seek the death penalty against the man accused of murdering the UnitedHealthcare CEO in New York City. The 26-year-old faces murder charges in both state and federal court. He denies these allegations, but this move by the Justice Department matters because the federal government has rarely carried out the death penalty in recent years, or pursued it, let alone carried it out. The Biden administration issued a moratorium on the death penalty. The Trump administration suspended that moratorium, and Attorney General Bondi called this particular crime an act of political violence, and that's why she's asking prosecutors to pursue the death penalty. You may have noticed that we're not mentioning the name of the alleged murderer. We're doing that for a reason, because we always want to keep focus on the victim in these cases, while some of the alleged criminals, and we say alleged because we're all innocent until proven guilty in American courts, we want to make sure that we keep the focus on the victim here. And the victim is Brian Thompson. He was the chief executive of UnitedHealthcare Group when he was gunned down in Midtown Manhattan. So more on this case as it develops, and more on all of these stories throughout the week on Smarter News. Thank you for your support of quick, concise, nonpartisan Smarter News. Have a great week.